Malka. Malka.
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
You're the only one who's on right now.
Okay.
I hope you enjoyed the session earlier.
I did. I certainly did. I'm sure I've got many more questions once I process it all. It's interesting. It's you know, being in a material world here, it's hard to comprehend sometimes of the spiritual aspect of things.
I do agree. Did I hear somebody else come on?
I think so.
Brenda, let's see.
Good evening, Brenda.
I'm here. Good evening.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Gedula Chimin Ha, Tati. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagbenu Paharenu No Ra Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun Na Gibor Dorshe Yehud Ha Kiva Sham Rem Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin Barchem Tacharem Rachame Sud Kacha Tamid Kamein Bet Tedresh Tzaditav Gimel Chasin Kadosh The road to Nael Adata. Set Kufbet, Ted Nunayan. Yachid Gea, Lamcha Pene, Zokre Kidu Shata. Yud Gimelamet, Pezayan Kuf. The letters of the month of Sivan, the Resh. It created the planet Kohav, the planet Mercury, and the Zion that created the constellation Tumim, the twins, the astrological sign of Gemini. Together, the Resh and the Zion spell the Hebrew word Raz, which means secrets. The gematria of Raz is 207, the same gematria as the Hebrew word Or, which means light, and En Sof, the endless world, and Adon Olam, master of the universe. Shavatenu Kabel, Ushmati Akatenu, Yodea Talumot, Shin Kufal, Tzadi Yotaf. We have brought the energy of creation into our space. Now we will utilize the 13 attributes of mercy to separate between the right column energy and the left column energy of this creation. Adonai Yohei Wahei, Adonai Yohei Wahei, El Rachum Vechanun. Erech apayim v'rav chesed v'emet Notzer chesed l'alafim Noseyawon v'achesha v'chata'av v'nakei. We'll now connect to the energy of this year, 5777, the year of the goat, with two verses that we study. The first is Lamentations chapter 3, verse 52, and we will start with a L'shem Yichud. L'shem yichud kudsha barichu ishkin te bitilu. Urchimu, utchilu, utchilu, urchimu. V'yachta l'shem yud he bevav he. V'yichuda sheli b'sheb ko Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. Lasok Torah mitzvah. Vayhino amadunai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu kananei aleinu maasei yadeinu kananehu. Tzod saduni katzipor oyevai chinam. This verse has five words. When we take the first letter of each word, we're able to permutate it into three Hebrew words. Satz ki ach, which translates as appear like brothers. When we take the final letters of those five words, we're able to permute them into Dir Yam, which translates as a sea of tenants. The second verse that we study is Joshua chapter 23, verse 8. Concealed in this verse is the name of the year, Tafshin Ayin Zion, and it is separated by seven letters each. Kim ba Adonai Yohewahe Elohechem Tadebaku Kasher Asitem Ad Hayom Hazeh. The year 5776 has the energy of the year of the pause. There are also two verses that would connect to this energy. And we study the first one is 2 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 34. Raka kohanim ha-yulimat v'lo yachlu lehavshit et kol ha-olot v'yechaskum achechem ha-levim. Ad kelo tam lacha v'yadit kachu ha-kohanim ki ha-levim yishre levav lehikadesh me ha-kohanim. This verse has 25 words. When we take the first letter of each word, we're able to permute them into eight names of God. Adonai Yohewahe La la hey, wa wa wa, yo la yo, ala me, hey hey hey, aka ah, reka ha. The second verse that we study that connects to the year of the pause is Isaiah chapter 26, verse 4. Bichu ba Adonai Yohewahe. Ade ad kibia yohe Adonai yohe wahe tzur olamim. There are three verses that connect to the energy of the year 5775, the year that swallows death forever. The first is Job chapter 7, verse 19. Kama lo tishe mimeni lo tarpeni al biliruki. The next verse connecting to this energy of 5775 is 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 23. Uru udu mikol hamachavoyam asher yitchabe sham ushavtem elai el nachon v'halachti itchem v'chayayim yeshno v'aretz v'chipasti oto b'kol alfei Yehuda. And the third verse is also from Job. It's chapter 20, verse 7. Tegelo lanetzach yoved roav 5774 has the energy of peace in the Middle East. There's only one verse that connects to this energy. It's 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 10. Wesamti makom le'ami li'Yisrael untati v'shakan takta v'lo yirgaz od v'lo yosifu v'nei avla la'anoto ka'asher barishona. We're now going to read a verse from the Zohar, from the Parasha of Yitro. It's Pasuk 29, and the energy of this Pasuk is that of certainty. Rabbi Abba Amar Bekama Atar Tanenan Dekucha Rifu Koma Diaved Leela Witata Kolaihu Kishot Viovada Kishot Veleila Mila Bialma Ivae Barnash Vedahya Leya Mineya Ulan Haga Beya Kalana Dehakulhu Ovada Dikshot Inun Wikola Itzirif Bealma. And now we'll scan the 72 names of God. And the 72 names from the Tzaddikim. And the Tzaddikim who left this evening, this day, which is the 12th of Sivan, Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Bar. He was a student of the Baal Shem Tov. And there's a very interesting story on our webpage on his Hilulah. I recommend you read it. Rabbi David Pardo and Rabbi Abraham ben Rabbi Noach Weinberg. And the eighth verse of the Ana Bekoach we say in a whisper. Today's class is an essay by Rabbi Oshag, and I think you're going to enjoy these next few classes, because the title of the essay is The Introduction to the Book of the Zohar. And you can find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom matrix in row 16, the right-hand column. That link opens up to a landing page for Rabbi Ashlag's essays. And then scroll down, I believe it is to class 30. Number one, in this introduction, I would like to clarify matters that are seemingly simple, matters that everyone fumbles with and for which much ink has been spilled, attempting to clarify. Yet we have not reached a concrete and sufficient knowledge of them. And here are the questions. What is your essence? What is our role in the long chain of reality of which we are but a small link? And I am adding, These questions are universal. Yet, in my opinion, I think it is imperative that one ask another question when asking these two questions. That third question is, do I truly want to know the answers, even if it interferes with my personal comfort zone in which I am now living my life? In other words, do I truly want to know the truth? If your honest answer to the third question is not really, then you need to spend some time contemplating what you want to learn. The reason for this is you cannot be open to hear the truth if you do not want to know the truth, especially if it interferes with your personal perceptions of the world or what Hanoch calls your agenda. Continuing to read. When we examine ourselves, we find that we are corrupted. We are as corrupted and as low as can be. And when we examine the operator who has made us, we are compelled to be at the highest degree, for is none so praiseworthy as him. For it is necessary that only perfect operations will stem from a perfect operator. And I am adding, this statement of truth is bringing us to ask the question, how can perfection create non-perfection? Or in other words, Hashem must be perfect or complete, or Hashem cannot be God to us. By definition of God, God is perfect and complete. Yet we all know that Hashem created mankind. And mankind may have been created perfect, but mankind was not complete, since there was a test in the Garden of Eden, and we failed that test. And thus we are no longer perfect. Thus the question being asked in this edition. Continuing to read. Our mind necessitates that he is utterly benevolent, beyond compare. How then did he create so many creatures that suffer and agonize all through their lives? Is it not the way of the good to do good, or at least not to harm so? How is it possible that the infinite that has neither beginning nor end will produce finite, mortal, and flawed creatures? And I am adding, just to add a clarification, the above question has not yet been answered in this introduction to the Book of Zohar as of yet. Section 2. In order to clear all that up, we need to make some preliminary inquiries, and not, God forbid, where it is forbidden. In the Creator's essence, of which we have no thought or perception whatsoever, and thus have no thought or utterance of him, but where the inquiry is a mitzvah, the inquiry of his deeds, it is as the Torah commands us, know thy God of thy father and serve him. And as it says in the poem of unification, by your actions we know you. Inquiry number one, how can we picture a new creation, something new that is not included in him before he creates it? When it is obvious to any observer that there is nothing that is not included in him, common sense dictates, for how can one give what one does not have? And I am adding, please contemplate this inquiry. it must be clear to you what the inquiry involves. Inquiry number two. If you say that from the aspect of his almightiness, he can certainly create existence from absence, something new is not that is not in him, there rises the question, what is that reality? Which can be determined as having no place in him at all, but is completely new. And I am adding, the notion that there is nothing that Hashem cannot do is being questioned in this inquiry. And not in a negative way, but in the idea that what does something outside of Hashem look like? If it is outside of him, was it once inside of him? If the answer is no, it was never inside of him, how do we understand creation of something not within the Creator? Inquiry number three. This deals with what Kabbalists have said, that one soul is a part of God above, in such a way that there is no difference between him and the soul, but he is the whole and the soul is a part. And they compared it to a rock carved from a mountain. There is no difference between the rock and the mountain, except that he is the whole and the rock is a part. Thus we must ask, it is one thing that a stone carved from the mountain is separated from it by an axe made for that purpose, causing the separation of the part from the whole. But how can you picture that about him? That he will separate a part of his essence until it departs his essence and becomes separated from him, meaning a soul, to the point that it can only be understood as part of his essence. I am adding, this is especially difficult to understand due to the spiritual laws that any difference of form creates separation spiritually, while similarity of form creates unity on a spiritual level. Section 3, inquiry number 4. Since the chariot of the Sitra Achra, the other side, and the Klipot, the shells, is so far at the other end of his holiness, until such remoteness is inconceivable, how can it be extracted and made from holiness, much less that his holiness will sustain it? I am adding, did Hashem create Satan and the other side? If the answer is no, where does it come from? Who created it? The answer is yes. Is there negativity in Hashem? This is what Rabbi Ashlag is asking. Inquiry number 5. The matter of the raising of the dead, since the body is so contemptible that immediately at birth it is doomed to perish and to be buried. Moreover, the Zohar said that before the body rots entirely, the soul cannot ascend to its place in the Garden of Eden, while there are still remnants of it. Therefore, why must it return and rise at the revival of the dead? Could the Creator not delight the souls without it? And I am adding, did you ever consider this question or these series of questions? Even more bewildering is what our sages said, that the dead are destined to rise with their flaws so that they will not be mistaken for another. And after that, he will cure their flaws. We must understand why God should mind that they would not be mistaken for another, that for that he would create their flaws and that would have to cure it. I am adding, Also, in our present world, the cure can take months or years. How long will the cure take? Of course, it could be instantaneously, since Hashem has no limitations. Then the questions asked in inquiry number 5 are important to consider. Inquiry number 6. Regarding what our sages said, that man is the center of reality, that the upper worlds and this corporate world and everything in them were created only for him, and obliged man to believe that the world had been created for him. It is seemingly hard to grasp that for this trifling human, whose value is no more than a wisp, with respect to the reality of the world, much less with respect to all the upper worlds, whose height and sublimity is immeasurable, that the Creator had troubled himself to create all these for him. And also, why would man need all that? Section 4. To understand these questions and inquiries, the only tactic is to examine the end of the act, that is, the purpose of creation. For nothing can be understood in the middle of the process, but only at its end. And it is clear that there is no act without a purpose, for only the insane can act purposelessly. I am adding, in other essays, Rabbi Ashlag has proved this assertion that one cannot see clearly a purpose in the middle of a process. We can only know the purpose by being aware of the end of the process. We cannot even know the purpose from watching the beginning, since the beginning is part of the process. Only from knowing the end of the process can we discern the purpose of the process, which also allows us to know the reason for every step in the process. Without the end, we cannot know even why the steps of the process are necessary. I know that there are those who cast over their backs the burden of Torah and mitzvot, saying the Creator has created the whole of reality, then left it alone. That became that because of the worthlessness of the creatures, it is not fitting for the exalted Creator to watch over their mean little ways. Indeed, without knowledge they have spoken, for it is impossible to comment on our lowliness and nothingness. Before we decide that we have created ourselves with all our corrupted and loathsome natures, I am adding. This paragraph is saying what some philosophers have said, yet they do not realize the earlier paragraph, which indicates one must know the end to evaluate the purpose. Thus, the idea that Hashem is not managing the world cannot be ascertained till we see the end. But while we decide that the Creator, who is utterly perfect, is the one who created and designed our bodies with all their admirable and contemptible attributes, surely that there can never emerge an imperfect act under the hand of the perfect worker, as each act testifies to its performer. And what fault is it if a bad garment, if some no good tailor has made it? Such as this we find in the Talmud, a tale about Rabbi Elazar, who came across a very ugly man. He said to him, "How ugly is this man?" The man replied, "Go and tell the craftsman that made me, how ugly is this instrument you have made?" Hence, those who claim that because of our lowliness and nothingness, it is not fitting for him to watch over us, and therefore he has left us, do nothing and display their ignorance. Try to imagine if you were to meet some man who would create creatures precisely so they would suffer and agonize their whole lives as we do, and not only that, but cast them behind his back, not wanting even to look after them, to help them a little. How contemptible and how low you would regard him. Can such a thing be thought of Hashem? And I am adding, Hashem is perfect, for if he were not, he would not be Hashem. Once that statement is internalized, the idea that Hashem is not looking after each and every human being throughout every minute of that human being's life is clearly not true. Section 5. Therefore, common sense dictates that we grasp the opposite of what appears to be on the surface and decide that we are truly noble and worthy creatures of immeasurable importance, actually worthy of the worker who has made us. For any faults you wish to perceive in our bodies, behind all the excuses that you give to yourself, falls only on the Creator who created us and the nature within us, for it is clear that he had created us and not we had created ourselves. He also knows all the ways that stem from the evil nature and attributes he has created in us. It is, as we have said, that we must contemplate the end of the act, and then we will be able to understand everything. It is as the saying goes, do not show a tool a job half done. And I am adding, this section seems to be saying that any negative actions we might do is because the Creator made us this way. We all know this cannot be true, since Hashem is perfect, and therefore his creations are perfect. So any mistake must not be a mistake. Learn this well. Section 6. Our sages have already said that the Creator created the world for no other reason but to delight his creatures. And here is where we must place our mind and all our thoughts. For it is the ultimate aim of the act of the creation of the world. And we must bear in mind that since the thought of creation was to bestow upon his creatures, he had to create in the souls a great measure of desire to receive that which he had thought to give them. For the measure of each pleasure and delight depends on the measure of the will to receive it. The greater the will to receive, the greater the pleasure, and the lesser the will, the lesser the pleasure from reception. Thus, the thought of creation itself necessarily dictates the creation of an excessive will to receive in the souls, to fill the immense pleasure that his almightiness thought to bestow upon the souls. For the great delight and the great desire to receive go hand in hand. Section 7. Once we have learned that, we come to a full understanding of the second inquiry in complete clarity. For we have learned what is the reality that can be clearly determined, which is not a part of his essence, to the extent that we can say that it is a new creation, existence from absence. And now that we know for certain that the thought of creation to delight his creatures necessarily created a measure of desire to receive from him all the goodness and pleasantness that he has planned for them, that will to receive was clearly not included in his essence before he had created it in the souls. Because from whom could he receive? It follows that he had created something new which is not in him. And yet we understand that according to the thought of creation, there was no need to create anything more than the will to receive. This is because this new creation is sufficient for him to fulfill the entire thought of creation, which he had thought to bestow upon us. But all of the filling in the thought of creation, all the benefits he had planned to render us, stem directly from his essence, and he has no reason to recreate them, since they are already extracted, existence from existence, to the great will to receive in the souls. Thus we evidently see that all the substance in the generated creation from beginning to end is only the will to receive. I am adding. Rabbi Ashlag is teaching that all of creations are based on the desire to receive. All creations means each and every creation. There is nothing in this created universe that is not a desire to receive some aspect of the Creator. Section 8. Now we have come to understand the words of the Kabbalists in the third inquiry. We wondered how it was possible to say about souls that they were a part of God above, like a stone that is carved from a mountain, that there is no difference between them except that one is a part and the other is a window, is a hole. And we wondered, it is one thing to say that the stone that is carved from the mountain becomes separated by an axe made for that purpose. But how can you say that about his essence? And also, what was it that separated the souls from his essence and excluded them from the Creator to become creatures? From the above, we clearly understand that the axe cuts and divides a physical object in two. The disparity of form divides the spiritual into two. For example, when two people love each other, you say that they are attached to one another as one body. And when they hate each other, you say that they are as far from one another as the east from the west. But there is no question of nearness or remoteness of location here. Rather, this implies the equivalence of form, when they are equal to in form. And each loves what the other loves and hates what the other hates. They love each other and are attached to one another. And if there is some disparity of form between them, and one of them likes something that the other hates, then to the extent that they differ in form, they become distant and hateful of one another. And if, for example, they are opposite in form, and everything that one likes the other hates, and everything the other hates is liked by the first, they are deemed as remote as the east from the west, meaning from one end to the other. And I am adding, this section is explaining the idea of the spiritual system as it relates to distance and closeness between creations. In the physical world, creations who are far apart spiritually can be close together physically. The same applies to creations who are close together spiritually. They can be at great distances physically. In the spiritual world, this dichotomy is not possible. Section 9. And you find that in spirituality, the disparity of form acts like the axe that separates the physical world, and the distance between them is proportional to the oppositeness of form. From this we learn that since the will to receive his delight has been imprinted in the souls, and we have shown that this form is absent in the Creator, because form from whom would he receive, that disparity of form that the souls acquired separate them from his essence, as the axe that carves a stone from the mountain. And because of this disparity of form, the souls were separated from the Creator and became creatures. However, everything the soul acquires of his light extends from his essence, existence from existence. It therefore turns out, with respect to his light, which they received in their kli, in their vessels, which is the will to receive, there is no difference whatsoever between them and his essence. This is because they received it, existence from existence, directly from his essence. And the only difference between the souls and the essence is that the souls are a part of his essence. I am adding, the vessel has a desire to receive an aspect of the essence of the Creator. When that desire is fulfilled, then the fulfilled vessel is the same as the essence of the Creator. This is due to the idea that the right column of the tree of life includes the left column of the tree of life. Or in other words, the left column supports the right column, and thus the whole takes on the essence that is similar in form to the Creator. This means that the amount of light that they receive in their plea, being the will to receive, is already separated from the Creator, as it is predicated on the disparity of form of the will to receive. And this disparity of form made it a part of by which they were separated from the whole and became a part. Thus, the only difference between them is that one is a whole and the other is a part, as a stone that is carved from a mountain and scrutinizes meticulously, for it is impossible to expand further on such an exalted place. Section 10. Now we can begin to understand the fourth inquiry. How is it possible that the chariot of impurity and Klipot would emerge from his holiness, since it is at the other end of his holiness? And also, how can it be that he supports and sustains it? Indeed, first we must understand the meaning of the existence of impurity and Klipot. Know that this great will to receive, which we determined was the very essence of the souls by the Creator, for which they are fit to receive the entire filling in the thought of creation, does not stay in that form within the souls. If it had, that they would have to remain eternally separated from him, because the disparity of form in them would separate them from him. And in order to mend that separation, which lies on the kli of the vessels, he created all the worlds and separated them into two systems. As in the verse, God has made them one against the other, which are the four pure worlds of Atzilut, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya, and opposite them the four impure worlds of Atzilut, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya. And he imprinted the desire to bestow in the system of the pure, Atzilut, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya, removed the will to receive for themselves from them, and placed it in the system of the impure worlds, Atzilut, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya. Because of that, they have become separated from the Creator and from all the worlds of holiness. For that reason, the Klipot are called dead, as in the verse, sacrifices of the dead, and the wicked that follow them, as our sages said, the wicked in their lives are called dead, since the will to receive imprinted in them is in oppositeness of form to his holiness, separates them from the life of lives, and they are remote from him from one end to the other. It is so because he has no interest in reception, only in bestowal. Whereas the Klipot want nothing of bestowal, but only to receive for themselves, for their own delight. And there is no greater oppositeness than that. And you already know of this spiritual remoteness begins with some disparity of form, and ends in oppositeness of form, which is the farthest possible distance to the last degree. My commentary. There is a tree of life and opposite, which the Torah calls the tree of knowledge, good and evil. Each has 10 sephirot. The vessel in the endless world was created with a desire to receive, to bring the vessel closer to the light within the endless world. Rabbi Ashlag is teaching that the Creator modified the essence of the vessel to be closer to the Creator by imprinting the desire to receive in order to share on the vessel's essence of the desire to receive. Rabbi Ashlag teaches in the above sections that the Klipot is also a vessel with the essence of the desire to receive. These Klipot vessels do not have a desire to receive in order to share, but instead have an essence of the desire to receive for oneself alone. This is helpful in understanding the process of creation, as it goes from its initial state to the state of completion. That's the end of the first 10 sections, and this is a good place to take a break. Does anyone have any questions?
Hanok.
Yes, Falka.
Hello? My understanding is that the Creator created creatures to know who he was and to also spiritually grow in the likeness of him, the Creator. Just as a child comes into the world and the father wants the son to grow up like him, in like a mirror image, which includes all the creators, also the Creator created the creatures here in the material world to have, to hopefully grow up to have all his attributes and that includes all, sharing, loving, kindness, you know, all the attributes that our Creator has. And that was my understanding of why He created our world.
And that is what is taught in the beginning and basic classes of Kabbalah. But we are now talking about our understanding of what the Zohar is teaching.
Okay.
And when you said a child comes into the world and the father wants him to be a mirror image of the father, that's really not true.
Okay.
A child comes into the world and the father wants the child to exceed him, to be greater than him. The father wants the child to have everything that he didn't have. In the case of the creator has brought into the world a vessel to reveal his light. But his ultimate goal is that the vessel, that child, will exceed the father. But how can anything be greater than Hashem? How can anything exceed Hashem? So the conclusion that is arrived at is the Creator created vessels that, in essence, will grow to become equal to the Creator. They will grow to be the friend of the Creator. And that is the actual end goal of creation.
Just as Abraham was and is. Just as Moshe is. They became a friend. I've reached the level endless world, but they were also called my friend.
Correct.
Okay.
And if in the world you have people, and I'm not criticizing, I'm explaining, in this world you have people who their ultimate goal is to be a son to the Creator.
Right.
But the ultimate goal is once they become a son, they will be motivated to become a friend. They will be motivated to be like the Creator. They will be motivated to be perfect, a perfect friend.
One more question.
One comment before you ask that question. I think you get a sense of why I think this is such a powerful essay.
Yes, it's very, very powerful. Absolutely.
What's the question?
This is a kind of just the tree of life. You know, in my beginnings of my studies years ago, I always wondered about the tree of life and the tree of good and evil. But, you know, we were kind of taught that they were the tree of good and the tree of evil, like two trees, you know, in the middle of the Garden of Eden. But what I kind of realized the other day, I was really looking at the tree, the Sephirot, and how that whole system works in a diagram. And all of a sudden, my mind had just gone straight to from Keter to Chokhmah to Bima to, is it Da'at? Is that how you say that? Da'at?
Dot.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, is that a part of the tree of life story? I know it's a combination of the right and left, and it comes down into the center. Is that considered where the tree of life, I know where it starts, but for us to in the middle, the central column, I'm thinking, is that the tree of life, you know, symbolically, is that the tree of life? Is that where we have to focus as it comes down the channels? Because it says knowledge. That's actually knowledge, right?
Yes.
Can you kind of explain that a little bit, or do you have time?
Oh, I'll take the time.
Okay.
Da'at is the center point between the right and the left.
Right.
Between Hachma and Bina, which is wisdom and understanding. Da'at is part of the tree of life. It is the essence of the tree of life. If Keter is part of the light. Is Keter so far above us, so far above Chachma, Bina, and Da'at, that it isn't part of the tree of life? Remember, Keter means crown. It means outside of the body. The Queen of England, is she queen if she wears her crown? Yes. Is she queen if she doesn't wear her crown? The answer is yes. So what's the purpose of the crown?
Authority.
Authority for others to perceive, not for her to perceive. She knows she's queen.
Right.
Now I've just used the word knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
The crown is outside of the tree of life. Therefore, Da'at is inside the tree of life. But as one grows to be a friend, one grows to wear the mantle of a crown. In order to be the tree of life, one has to reach the level of the crown. To be outside the body and inside at the same time. That can't really be easily understood with a physical body. And that's why Da'at is so difficult to know what it is. It is a part of the tree of life, and it's not part of the tree of life. And that depends on the consciousness of the observer. Do you observe the tree of life with a crown, or do you observe the tree of life without a crown?
I wasn't aware of that teaching. I will look at it differently, like I have last several weeks. You know, just all of a sudden, it just had like this beaming light come out me. You know, when I was looking at that, which I have not done, it has not really jumped out at me at that point until that time. And it went like, I went, oh my goodness. So the next question is the whole system, right, left, central column with Keter, is that whole system considered the tree of life or not? You just said once you reach the Keter, then that becomes the tree of life, but they're all part of the tree of life.
In the Sefer Yetzirah, it opens with the following paraphrase statement. There is 10, not 11. There is 10, not 9. The tree of life is 10 sephirot, 10 levels of consciousness, 10 levels that transform infinite energy to physical mass. That's the tree of life. 10 levels of consciousness that transforms infinite energy to physicality. The discussion of crown or not crown does enter into the question, because if there is a crown and if there is dots, then there's 11. But the Sefer Yetzirah says, no, there can't be 11. So therefore, if we have a crown, Da'at is not a Sefirah. But it's the binding by striking point between Chachma and Bina. And if we don't have a crown, and Dot is not a Sephirah, then it's 9. And we're told by the Sefer Yetzirah that it's 10 and not 9. So therefore, Dot is a Sephirah. It is and it isn't, depending on the consciousness of the observer. But the observer is outside of the tree of life. Is the tree of life the creator itself? I'm leading to a lot of questions that need to be contemplated. And obviously we don't have the time tonight to come to a resolution of those contemplations. But your questions are excellent and they do need to be contemplated. And you will find a truth for yourself through that contemplation. And that's why at some point I highly recommend to every student to study the Sefer Yetzirah with me. Because the result of that is 40 plus weeks of meditation, and every week is a different aspect of meditation, which helps you find what is the proper way to contemplate these questions for you, which will be different from someone else, because you are coming from the tree of life at a different way, either a right column or a left column or a central column or a higher, the upper worlds or the lower worlds, all of these different aspects. So whenever you feel that it's time, you give me a call and we'll discuss whether we can study the Sefer Yetzirah together, because that is something that needs to be taught one-on-one.
Okay.
So I wish everyone a beautiful evening and much shalom in your life.
Shalom, home note. Thank you.
Thank you.